It's better over here.
Now at T-Mobile, get four 5G phones on us and four lines for $25 a line per month when you switch with eligible trade-ins. All on America's largest 5G network.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees and $10 device connection charge. Phones via 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. Bill credits end if you pay off devices early. See T-Mobile.com.
Come join me, Andrew Filippone.
And me, Patrick Peterson, three-time NFL All-Pro cornerback on First and Pod for premier NFL coverage and conversations.
Our motto on the podcast is every team, every week, and we don't play favorites. Every episode, you get a glimpse of the entire National Football League with First and Pod. Follow and listen to First and Pod on Mondays and Fridays on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, 11 o'clock hour here on a Wednesday. Cody and Gold, Alex Gold, Cody Tapp, Drew Nixon with you. Coming up in about 40 minutes, we'll head out to Arrowhead. Expected to hear from Andy Reid, Patrick Mahomes, ahead of Chiefs, Broncos. I'm kind of trying to transition a little bit towards that game now after the Monday night game. The whole week is shortened and truncated, of obviously heading in to Denver. Noon game, a rare noon game right here on 96.5 The Fan. That means pregame is going to start at 9, if I'm
correct.
Right? 9 a.m. is when pregame coverage will start Sunday with Dan Israel and Josh Klingler. And then, of course, during the game, all through all of them, Mitch Holthus, Dane and Hughes.
The same Josh Klingler. But, yes, I like noon Sunday games. It's my favorite time slot.
I'll be there Sunday.
I know that is an unpopular opinion. The best time to watch football is noon on Sunday.
Yeah, I'll be there. Maybe it's because I don't have kids and you do, and so it's different. For me, I don't like the noon because I want the 8 games during red zone in the noon slate for me to watch all that before the Chiefs play either at 3:25 or online. I think it's also different if you're going to the game. If it's a road game, even more reason for it not to be noon. Because then I want, like, if it's a home game and you're going to tailgate, then I get it. You might prefer the 3:25 or the noon depending on how you want to structure your day. I think everybody's going to, if you're going to the game, I think the time zone or the time for the kickoff is going to fluctuate on what you would prefer.
My order would go noon on Sunday, 3:25 on Sunday, Sunday night football, Monday, then Thursday. That's my exact definitive ranking of the order I would like to see games in. Just to be clear.
Yeah.
Not that there are several other choices.
So anyway.
We did run into
Chiefs-Broncos
Sunday. Yeah, Chiefs-Broncos this Sunday. We'll talk more about them coming up in just a little bit. When you look at what the Chiefs have doing, one thing that did stand out about Sunday, we didn't get to yesterday because there was so much to talk about in that game on Monday night. Xavier Worthy's going to need to stop being a rookie at some point this year if the inevitable goals are still reached. Because the truth is, the way I watch him play, the 33-yard gain, which you and I both agree was on him, not on Mahomes. I think some people try to put that on Mahomes because he's had a tough start to the season and they want to view it differently. Fine. The way that the end arounds are going, it seems like maybe he's either taking it too deep or those things. He's pacing for 578 yards and 10 touchdowns. I'll give him that. He's got 5 scores already and he's on pace for 10 of them total this season. The way he's playing makes me think that if Hollywood Brown were healthy, he wouldn't even have been on the field. That he wouldn't even be playing regularly. We'd be asking, where is Xavier Worthy? I think he has got to find a way to get past the rookie stuff. He looks more like a rookie than Rashee Rice ever did.
He definitely does. I mean, past 4 games, 10 catches, 24 targets, 81 yards, 4 carries, -2 yards. I mean, the stat line has not been good. This is where I think you and I just differ just on rookie production, though. Just we always will and always have, I guess, of what we expect. This is why 2 weeks ago when you and I were discussing, like, why I didn't think his target share, like, he's ever going to get to 10 targets, and, like, that's not what he should have this year. I think sometimes we expect way too much out of a rookie. This year, I think everybody was guilty of it, though, in fairness, after week one, where he had 3 touches and 2 touchdowns. And so, like, all of a sudden, everybody was, oh, my gosh, he's going to have a massive season. I remember even in, like, the fantasy football world, everybody's like, oh, my gosh, what a steal he was in the draft. And now you got people that are only holding on to him because it might be a keeper opportunity. Otherwise, he's not been a factor for you. The one thing he's still pacing for is 10 touchdowns, as you said, 578 yards. He's going to be fine, but he has looked like a rookie the last 2 to 4 games for sure. But this is why, for those that were pushing a month ago, for like, oh, he needs to start getting 9 or 10 targets a game. No, he doesn't.
I wanted to test that to find out what they had. I now know.
Yeah, but they didn't even have to do that to test it, I guess. It's like he's you know,
at that point, they just had no one else to throw to.
In this past game, because he was having a rough night, clearly, when they ran that McCole Hardman touch pass after they were successfully running it and it was a bad, you know, ended up being a bad play, they gave it to McCole Hardman. They didn't even give that to Xavier Worthy on that one because Worthy was struggling and looked like a rookie, whether it was, you know, down the field, should have been a touchdown, lost his place on the field, boundary. Or just that run, the reason why -2 yards, 4 carries, just some bad decision-making, unfortunately, in those areas. He's going to be fine.
Some of that's play design, right? Like, I think that he cost himself a little bit, and I heard the broadcast was saying, like, maybe there's a misalignment there, or...
He might have lined up too far outside, they were saying.
Yeah, and maybe that's the case. I don't know. The point is, he looks like a rookie. He looks like a guy that you would expect to... And look, this doesn't mean anything for his future. Someone's like, what do you think you get in year 2 with him? Wide receiver... Besides quarterback, which is the obvious answer, wide receiver is the most difficult position to evaluate in the draft and year to year. Every year, there are like 10 500-yard wide receivers, and 3 of them the following year are worse. 4 of them the following year are the same. They're 500-yard wide receivers, and 3 of them get way better. And if you think you can correctly guess which one of those is going to be, well, then go get a job being an NFL GM because it's hard. Like, most of them end up being like what McCall Hardman was, a 550-yard wide receiver his rookie year, who's a 550-yard wide receiver his second year, who's a 550-yard wide receiver his third year, and for the rest of time is that player. Very few turn into this superstar, which we hope, obviously, Xavier Worthy eventually turns into. I'm not down on him for this season now that they got DeAndre Hopkins. But this is part of the reason they had to get DeAndre Hopkins. He's just doing, like, it's mistake stuff. And we're 8 games in. It's like, come on.
It's that stuff. And Worthy and Rice are also 2 different types of receivers. And so we know the circumstances last year with all the injuries, but also they were asking him and they needed him to be the guy that was underneath routes, yards after the catch. That's where he was really effective. They weren't taking deep shots with Rashee Rice. Xavier Worthy at this point in his career is still more of a deep threat than just an all-around underneath great route runner. They have Travis Kelce doing that. They have D-Hop doing that now.
Yeah.
You know, they had Rice early in the season. I think that's why it's an adjustment until the deep balls are connecting. Remember, they've missed some, one of them was Mahomes' fault, but on Monday that was on Xavier Worthy. They've missed.
One they got a PI on. Give him credit for that.
They've missed on a couple the last 3 weeks as well. Otherwise, his stat line, just from a stat line perspective, would be looking much different. Because if you compare, and there was different circumstances, Rashee Rice last year, the first, you know, 8-9 games, Rashee Rice had 5 targets, 29 yards in week 1, 3 catches, at 20 yards in week 2, 59 yards, 32, 33, 72, 60, and 56. Those were the first 8 games of Rashee Rice's career. If you look at Xavier Worthy, first game, you know, he had the 2 touchdowns, 1 on the ground, but 2 catches, 47. 2 for 17, 2 for 17, 3 for 73, which is kind of similar to Rice in that middle of the game, middle of the month. Then 3 for 25, 3 for 19, 4 for 37, none for 0 yards. So it's not world's difference, I guess, is what I'm actually trying to say. It may look that way. Statistically, it's actually not terribly far off, considering that what type of receiver Worthy is, where he has to connect on one of those deep passes. If you think he's going to rack up yards in a game, he's not going to have 5 catches for 80 yards unless one of those is a 50-yard reception.
Yeah, it was 30 catches, 361 yards, and 3 scores on 39 targets for Rashee Rice in his first 8 games. So yeah, you're right. Maybe, but we can all acknowledge, just like we just talked about DeAndre Hopkins, the way it looks. Rashee Rice, everyone at that point was like, I don't understand why you're just not throwing him the ball more. Like, he was slowly developing into their single biggest target. And it was like 2 weeks after that. It was week 11, from what I'm looking at, when Rashee Rice was a completely different player and a completely different animal, and they just opened up the doors and said, screw it, you're here. I don't feel like they're getting ready to do that with Xavier Worthy. And they don't need to be clear. That's not what I'm asking for. What I'm saying is, I would feel dramatically different this season if he made like 5 less rookie mistakes than he's made, right?
This Monday night was the worst. That's what it was. It's fresh because it just happened. Like, not knowing the boundary.
A week ago, you and I had a topic in the rundown that said, Worthy's got to like tighten it up.
Yeah, this past Monday was really bad just because you got to know where the sideline is. I mean, that's basic stuff. That's one's inexcusable. The other ones, you know, I think you can be critical of play design, or did Mahomes lead him too far, whatever. That was not the case Monday night. That was a misjudgment of the football field, not knowing where the sideline was, not knowing where your feet were, all that.
Running too close to the sideline when you could have just, I mean, he was wide open. The fact that that play didn't go for a touchdown, easily the most frustrating play of the game.
Yeah, wide open.
So. Because it's another thing, like Kansas City is always, like Ross Tucker asked us earlier, like, what do you guys talk about? I think the thing that like annoys Kansas City fans the most, and annoys me probably the most too, I'm not like separate from that, I would say I'm in the same ballpark, is Kansas City is always one game away from just like destroying a team. Like it always feels like it's like right on the cusp. They just go and score and it'd be like 10-0 or anything else and we just get there.
All right, reminder, we're going to hear from Andy Reid and Patrick Mahomes coming up a little bit later on this hour. Up next, I want to talk more about the trade deadline that wrapped up yesterday, what the Ravens did, what the Bengals did not, what some of these other contenders did. That's next. It's better
over here. After investing billions to light up our network, T-Mobile is America's largest 5G network. Plus, right now, you can switch, keep your phone, and we'll pay it off up to $800. See how you can save on every plan versus Verizon and AT&T at T-Mobile.com/keep and switch.
Up to 4 lines via virtual prepaid card. Allow 15 days. Qualifying unlocked device credit service ported 90 plus days with device and eligible carrier and timely redemption required. Card has no cash access and expires in 6 months.
Come join me, Andrew Filippone.
And me, Patrick Peterson, 3-time NFL All-Pro cornerback on First and Pod for premier NFL coverage and conversations.
Our motto on the podcast is every team, every week, and we don't play favorites. Every episode, you get a glimpse of the entire National Football League with First and Pod. Follow and listen to First and Pod on Mondays and Fridays on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Right here on Cody and Gold. Coming up in 20 minutes or so, Andy Reid, Patrick Mahomes, right here on your home for the Chiefs, 96.5 The Fan. Get to hear about, hopefully from Andy, perhaps the likelihood of Juju Smith-Schuster being back. If not, then it's obviously all about the Buffalo game because they would have just put him on IR if they didn't think he was at least available for then. So we'll see if he's good to go.
Sometimes they miss that deadline, but it's internally, yeah. That's not how they're thinking.
I mean, it's all about the Buffalo game more than Denver on Sunday, but we're getting close to potentially seeing Dana and Juju Smith-Schuster both back from injury. Nazi Johnson, concussion protocol. Like they could get three pieces back potentially this weekend. If not, I expect them all back by the Buffalo game. But
a more important game to get them
yes,
back.
But maybe you ease them in a little bit. I really am fascinated to see how they're going to utilize Juju now that D-Hop is here. Like what's that look like? Because the slant, the touchdown on the slant, that was something they ran with Juju Smith-Schuster, and actually in the Saints game, it led to an interception, unfortunately, that time. But like, it was the same play on the. I think they flipped it.
Ball got knocked down at the line of scrimmage, though, on that one, right?
Was Colin Saunders' interception?
Oh, Colin Saunders, that was a hell of a play. That's right, that was a hell of a play.
But it was a similar, similar regard. I don't know if it was the same formation, but it was a slant inside the 5 yard line to get a touchdown, and it was there, and then Colin Saunders ended up making a nice play. But point being is, I just want to see how they're going to utilize Juju now with this good luxury to have suddenly. That Juju becomes your, fourth passing option at times?
I'd have to probably, the easiest way to look through it probably, once we get an idea, and hopefully Andy gives us some idea on Juju Smith-Schuster coming up here in 15 minutes, is, this feels like the old adage that people used to say about the 40-man roster with baseball, which is, like, but who is going to come off the field? I'm like, I don't know, man, if you make me go look at the snap counts for the Chiefs in their most recent game from wide receiver, I think I'll find some Juju Smith snaps. I don't think I'm going to have any trouble narrowing the field there, I guess is what I'm getting at. But yeah, you're right. It is a similar role or style. It's DeAndre Hopkins light, but maybe that's just the shift that they'll make offensively.
The other thing yesterday we know was the trade deadline. Nothing new happened for the Chiefs, but as we got off the air yesterday, there were a couple other moves happening in the AFC, one directly impacting a contender. That's the Baltimore Ravens, who we know defensively are not the same team that they have been. Even though their offense has been great, their defense has been a problem. So what do? They go and trade with the Los Angeles Rams. They get corner Tre'Davious White. Yes, that name sounds familiar. He was with the Bills for many, many years.
Really good player. He was with the Bills.
Yeah, yeah. And it's White and a 2027. I mean, they're trading way in the future. I'm all about that. Whatever.
It's
a seventh round pick to the Ravens for a 2026 seventh round pick. So literally, they're just giving a seventh round pick earlier.
a pick swap 2 years from now.
That's all it is. He spent the first 7 years with Buffalo. You're right. He had a first team All-Pro year. I don't think he's the same player he was 4 years ago. necessarily. It's part of the reason why Buffalo ended up moving on from him. But this was a move Baltimore needed to make. Once Marshawn Lattimore was up in D.C. with the Commanders, this was probably their next path to pivot to. And they did. They go and get Tre'Davious White. I bring this up not only because, hey, what do we think it means for Baltimore? But we know the Chiefs, we were talking about corner help. I don't know what the salary is for Tre'Davious White, but would that have been a move that made sense?
Right?
I mean, why not?
The question you have to ask yourself is Tre'Davious White better than Joshua Williams? Every trade that they were looking at essentially came with that question.
Yep.
Is this player noticeably, in my opinion, for sure will be by the end of the year?
I hear you, but it was better. I'll be honest with
Tre'Davious White, anymore?
He's 29. $1.2 million cap hit for the whole year, as in it was going to cost them like $300,000 or $400,000 salary, even if he's not better than Williams.
You'll just take the competition.
My third corner slot, whether he's a slot corner or not, you can be third on the depth chart. I don't care. He certainly would get on the field, whether he's better than Joshua Williams or not. He would be on the field. Is he better than Roland Wallace right now in his career? Yes. I feel confident in saying that. No disrespect to that
one,
kid.
I feel very
good
about.
He's an undrafted rookie. I mean, it's going to take some time. He's actually done a nice job considering lack of experience, but I do feel confident.
And I didn't know he was 2 months ago.
No.
If you go back like last week and even the week before that, and just seeing the discussion that like you guys have had about the moves that the Chiefs have made, it doesn't seem like this was even on the radar for Brett Veach. Otherwise, he would have found a way to get it done based on how he's gotten other deals done. I don't even know if they looked Tre'Davious White's way. He would have gotten it done.
Here's the thing. I know he's only 29 years old, but corners is second in the league to fades faster than you realize to running back. They get bad in a hurry. I know that this is not the end-all be-all. We've had a lot of conversations about how the metrics are sometimes flawed. Technically, Roland Wallace has a better Pro Football Focus grade than Tre'Davious White. Tre'Davious White has, by all accounts and all scouts' accounts, he stinks. He stinks. So you might be like, well, he can't be worse than Joshua Williams. And I'm here to tell you, yeah, he could have been. And I know that you're like, well, then, but like, why not risk it and open up the competition and all the other normal things? As I would say, well, Spags defense takes a half a season to learn for any player to come in. So by the time Tre'Davious White might be better than Joshua Williams or Roland Wallace will be by the end of the year, he'll be just learning the defense. I actually don't mind standing put here. Had they went and targeted a corner, sure. But if they were going to go after a corner, I think it had to be for a guy you knew was better. Not like wondered or had, like Marshawn Lattimore is better, right? He's better than the guys they have on the roster, and I don't have any questions. I don't know that for sure about Tre'Davious White. Is his career better? Yeah, hell yeah it is. Tre'Davious White had a hell of a run. Is he better now?
And if you look at to me, this one doesn't move the needle at all because the Ravens were desperate. They give up 291 pass yards a game. The Chiefs give up 295 total yards or something in that ballpark where it's miserably bad. They had to do anything, I think. More of just a desperation. We have to try to do something and hope that it clicks where the 2019 Tre'Davious White can somehow show up for 10 games.
Baltimore's still dead last in the NFL at 280.9 yards allowed in the air per game. That is 16 yards worse than the next closest team. Now, look, some of those teams, right? In this case, Baltimore does get hurt by the same reason Detroit is bottom four in this list. When you're getting beat by 30, right? Like Denver got lost by 30, but they don't hand it off to Javonte Williams a lot, right? But they throw on you a little bit when you're bad. Like the trouble is when you're like a good team and you're like, or you're like a mediocre team and they're still burning in that. Kansas City right now lets up the 15th most passing yards per game. Teams traditionally do at some point in the game trail them. And so like that part does stand out. But yeah, I'm just like, I felt like you had to be better to do that. I didn't think any of the AFC contenders got themselves any better at the deadline. The best move of any of the teams that the Chiefs are going to play was Amari Cooper for the Bills.
That was the best move. Absolutely. I was on in Buffalo yesterday, and they were asking just like our opinion of where the Bills are at, and my opinion, I guess, and I said, hey, here's kind of how we've been talking about the Bills. And I was like, hey, everybody in Kansas City was at the time bummed out that Amari Cooper wasn't traded. I go, now everybody's opinion's probably changed because DeAndre Hopkins just had a huge game. But yeah, we all thought that was a great move for Buffalo. I'm with you. That was the biggest needle mover of the contenders. I think Baltimore makes a move that they needed a little extra help. Why not? I'm surprised your Bengals didn't try to get better on defense, but also they're a 4-win team right
now. Apparently they're
a 4-win team, so I get it.
I wondered if they would go after somebody like Calais Campbell because I think Ojulari would have been interesting, but the Giants were asking for a second round pick, I think, for him, which for a guy that's going to be a free agent next year, do you want to pay him? Is it worth a second round pick for somebody like that? Probably not.
The NFL has told us consistently that they do value years of control similar to baseball. The Chiefs gave up a third round pick for Kadarius Toney because he had two more years under contract. The Cowboys just gave up the same compensation the Chiefs did for DeAndre Hopkins, not because he's as good of a player, but because he has two more years of control that left when he got traded from Carolina. And so there is a value in that. If Ojulari is only a year, you can't even possibly justify giving up a second round pick for a rental the NFL. No,
I mean, I told you I was joking with Drew off air. Like a day or two ago. I'm like, I hope Cincinnati goes and were to mortgage the future.
I was hoping they would have gotten
for a wild card spot or whatever.
It would
help
their problem. It would help their number one problem.
Being cheap, that's one of their biggest problems.
Well, that's the I guess that's the other thing I wasn't thinking about, but yes.
I was blown away by a stat from them. And no reason I would have paid attention to it because Cincinnati didn't matter for a long time, but now the Chiefs and the Bengals are rivals. Cincinnati, until they had just made a trade for Khalil Herbert, a nothing trade, right? I mean, they traded for a backup running back.
Yes, correct.
That was only gold. The third trade they had made in season in their franchise's history.
They trust the draft too much.
Third, but they've never won anything.
And their GM's not good enough.
Trust the draft too much. Are they even good at drafting?
No.
How stupid of an organization are you? You're not good at either thing.
Not particularly.
Yeah. So anyway, as far as the contenders, that was, yeah, there was, the Texans didn't go out and do anything. I think their struggle is offensive line, and they can't find offensive line help this season. Christian Darrisaw was the one, got hurt, I should say, in Minnesota, and then they got Cam Robinson. There was no offensive line help really for the Texans to go out and get. They just have to get better. So out of the contenders, yeah, Buffalo and Kansas City, I actually think got the best out of the trades. They improved the most.
If you balloon this up to the whole league, is Za'Darius Smith a bigger addition than Amari Cooper is to the Bills?
For the Lions to get Za'Darius
Smith. Yeah. We're talking the whole league.
Yeah, you look at their.
That's the best move of the entire.
You look at their team and where they're at, and also when they lost Aiden Hutchinson.
Yeah.
Like, look, we all know it's a bummer losing Rashee Rice, whatever. Losing Aiden Hutchinson, I mean, the equivalent is if the Chiefs lost Chris Jones or Travis Kelce or somebody. I mean, that's how big of a loss that was for the Lions. They had to go make a move, and I think Za'Darius Smith definitely helps them in that area. A lot of people on the text line, and we've seen this the last few days, 913-586-7965. Keep bringing up two names to go sign now that trade deadline's over. Xavien Howard and Marcus Peters. I understand why both names get brought up. Let's start with Howard. I brought this up a few days ago.
He's 31. I looked it up yesterday.
Howard's 31. If you do a quick Google search, he hadn't been signed. There was some allegations. I'll leave allegations. Nothing confirmed of some things in the offseason. I think that's playing a role in this about some stuff that was alleged involving a teenager. You can Google it yourself if you want. As far as Marcus Peters goes, I'll never say never anymore, I guess, because they brought back Kareem Hunt, but I just...
And it is going gangbusters.
I guess I won't say 31, I won't say never, but yeah. What was the Diana Racine report? Spags wanted a young, fast corner. What is Marcus Peters not at this point of his career?
Old and slow.
Yeah. So
also, all his corners tackle.
Yeah, that Marcus was Peters not Marcus never Peters wanted to tackle.
Thing. No.
Marcus Peters never wanted to tackle.
Business decisions. Look, I'll say... The argument of they're on the street, they can't be that good, took a big hit this year with the addition of Kareem Hunt. It is hard to make the argument that they couldn't possibly be better because Kareem Hunt was on the street, available to every team in the league, and now he's like the third most efficient running back in the NFL apparently this year. And so it's not zero, but also like, what am I going to do? Pluck out the one time it worked and be like, well, they could just pick up any corner off the street and it'll go great.
Is J.C. Jack? I don't know how J.C. Jackson is, but he's another name that is a free agent currently.
Is he? Man.
Per this, Sharp Football
all,
Analysis,
all
yes.
You're describing is exactly what I just said about Tre'Davious White. Corners age like
he's 28,
milk.
But he fell off a cliff.
Dude, they age like milk.
He was a name three years ago everybody wanted. Remember when New England traded him to the Chargers? People were a little bummed out here. People thought he was, yeah. And then maybe I have it backwards. They traded him back to New England, didn't they?
They did,
yeah.
For nothing. Like, just to get him back out of their building.
He's not in the league.
Corners age so horribly. They all age just like running backs. It's just like 2 years later.
You can. It's almost like
they just stink immediately.
In a way, you can almost never have too many. Like if you drafted a corner in the first or second round every draft, you're doing the right thing almost because of that exact reason that you're saying.
Well, I don't think it's an accident that the Chiefs are one of the best. The Chiefs have consistently been one of the best defenses in the league and also happen to be one of the best teams at finding corners.
Mm-hmm.
Those things are probably somewhat related. I'm sure Mahomes and Andy Reid and all these other things would weight higher gold, obviously, but that's not a non-factor for this team. That's what, you know, like that's the whole thing. And everything it comes back around to is with the Chiefs, being better at those things just make a difference. Somebody was asking on the text line because they were talking like first round picks and all stuff. Yeah. Like, are the Chiefs even good at taking first round picks? I'm like, well, in the Andy Reid era, Mahomes, Karloftis, McDuffie, I would argue are hits. Can't argue Karloftis is not a hit at this point, I don't think. Those are hits. Felix Anudike and Clyde Edwards-Helaire are at the very least NFL caliber players. Probably, you know, like deserving of a first round pick, we'll find on FAU. Clyde, no. But he's going to have a 6, 7, 8 year career maybe in the NFL, right? Maybe not quite that long, but close enough. For a running back, he's had a career. Worthy, we don't know. They're not that bad at taking first round picks. I'd say their success rate is less like anyone else. They just got Mahomes, one of the single most generational player you can get. McDuffie, a future All-Pro, and George Karloftis, a solid pass rusher. And they're doing that while picking
at least half the league.
And they're doing that while picking at 32 now.
Yeah, McDuffie's obviously a stud. It was weird. I saw the PFF grades come out. That was actually one of his worst games on Monday night.
And
it was weird because obviously they were down multiple receivers. There was one or two plays where maybe he got had a little more than normal. Who knows why? He's been unbelievable
maybe
this year.
Tempt him into a pick.
But I was surprised. Yeah, his grade was in the 50s, I think, for the game. It was just surprising. Normally not where he would be.
There was one penalty that was called on him. I don't know how much penalties set you back in Pro Football Focus grade if they do at all. But
was it that non-existent hold?
Yes.
It was the one that they didn't show on camera because they got the wrong.
But what's weird is you look at the stats. You look at the stats, though, the PFF grade doesn't matter. So 4 targets, 2 receptions, 15 yards. He had the one touchdown that gets credited against him, but he got a 54.7.
This makes no sense.
He got a 50 point.
Opened up his hips, so he can't be any good.
Yeah, he got a 50. Now, Joshua Williams on the flip side, 4 targets, 2 catches given up, 18 yards, no touchdowns, had a 62 grade.
You and I both watched that game. Who was the better corner in that game?
Well, we just know who the better corner is.
Like, sometimes Pro Football Focus is. And, like, someone gets, I don't remember who it was. I got an argument with someone who wore to Pro Football Focus once because I called their grade subjective. And they're like, well, they're not subjective.
Well, of course they are.
There's, like, a system in place in which people are judging. I'm like, but it's a person judging it. You cannot tell me what each individual person calls a winning rep or a non-winning rep is subjective. Gold might watch a rep from Felix Anudike Uzama because he's he loves him. He's like, that was a winning rep. And because I've been kind of hard on him, I'd be like, he didn't win that rep. Try harder. Like, right? It's subjective by nature. Anytime you introduce the human element to the judging system, you know, you're not offering me any kind of consistency in this. That's all.
Someone brought up on the text line, let's go back 10 years. Hartman said of DK,
they won 2 Super Bowls in a row. I'm so tired. I don't do that.
The thing that comes up is, look, they might have won them without DK. With DK, they might not have. Who knows? But they drafted the players that helped them win the Super Bowls. So it doesn't matter what statistically we look at and say, DK is clearly a better wide receiver than McCormick. If McCormick helped them win a Super Bowl, that's a great pick for the Kansas City Chiefs. I think you just have to look at it that way. Just as the same way as the Kadarius Toney.
I weight things differently when you are successful in spite of that. Like, I'm never going to be that mad about the Clyde Edwards-Helaire pick. Was it the right pick? No. Should they have just taken Tyler Boyd with the pick instead? Sure. Did it inevitably stop them from completing their goals? Absolutely not.
And the player helped them do that. So the player fulfilled what they needed, essentially.
There's just a limit for how critical I can be if the move did not bury you.
All right, coming up next, we continue the Chiefs Red Half Hour. We're going to head out to Arrowhead, going to hear from Andy Reid, Patrick Mahomes, maybe how the injury status is going for a couple, including Juju Smith-Schuster and Mike Dana. That's next on your home for the Chiefs, 96. It's better
over here. Now at T-Mobile, get 4 5G phones on us and 4 lines for $25 a line per month when you switch with eligible trade-ins. All on America's largest 5G network.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees and $10 device connection charge. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on a required finance agreement due. Bill credits end if you pay off devices early. See T-Mobile.com.
Come join me, Andrew Filippone.
And me, Patrick Peterson, three-time NFL All-Pro cornerback on First and Pod for premier NFL coverage and conversations.
Our motto on the podcast is every team, every week, and we don't play favorites. Every episode, you get a glimpse of the entire National Football League with First and Pod. Follow and listen to First and Pod on Mondays and Fridays on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Five the Fan.
Welcome in to the Chiefs Red Half Hour. Every day at 11:30 with Cody and Gold on your new home for Chiefs football. 96.5, The Fan.
We're expected to hear from Andy Reid, Patrick Mahomes in the next couple of minutes. As soon as they're up at the podium, we'll head right out there. You'll hear him on your home for the Chiefs 96.5, The Fan. Someone did text in. Cody, maybe this is your job since you love PFF so much.
Oh, yeah?
You reference it all the time. Someone says, anyone can apply before the season starts to analyze for PFF. They have you watch
that.
Videos, try to teach you what to watch for. They said their stepson was approved to analyze for them. They pay you $30 to $35 an hour to watch certain amount of games each weekend.
Damn, what do I make here? $30 to $35 an hour?
Sure, this is right up your alley.
Should I be watching pro football focus?
You want me grinding tape?
You do this for college football. This seems like right up your alley. Do it for college football. You're sitting around watching every single game anyway.
How long is it going to take to watch every single player on the field snap? I mean, is it just one person per game?
I don't know. But anyone can apply before the start of the season. The fact that anybody can just go and apply gives me even more reason to think this is a bunch of crap. The PFF
it's just like some fair. Dude like, no, off
no,
the street.
Like, no disrespect to your stepson that got the gig. That's pretty
like
cool.
It's his college side hustle.
Yeah, like, that's cool. I'm just saying, like, if that... Even more reason to not take the grading system seriously. I note... The argument against it would be someone would say, well, teams pay thousands of dollars to have access to the info. They must think it's valuable. It's a strong rebuttal.
I also know that some teams laugh at the grades after it.
Correct.
They just like,
that's
flat
also
out
true.
Get some wrong.
Yeah. Someone says, I was going to apply myself. Go to their career page. Seasonal work. They give you games in what position. Drew, do it for a little college football.
There you go. So I'm just watching like O-line play.
Drew, you just... Oh, God.
How is Binkley not being paid to watch the offensive line for somebody?
Yeah, I think Bink's missing
Bink
out more
should
than
definitely
I am
do
even
this.
On this.
Have Bink be the guy that gets to watch offensive line play in MAC games, MACtion, okay?
PFF grades for MACtion?
And he watched Central Michigan against, I don't know, pick somebody else, you know,
Ball
Toledo.
State, Miami, Ohio last
yeah,
night.
Sure. Ball yeah. State, Miami of Ohio. Bink's doing PFF grades.
That was a good game, too. I think that hit... There's no way that one person does one game individually and watches all. There's no way.
Well, you watch one position. I can see that.
Oh, if
your job is
group.
Only wide receivers in that game, you could do that.
Oh, yeah. I'll be honest. Based on the interceptions this year, I'm surprised to find out that Patrick Mahomes is a top five pro football focused quarterback.
You know
this year.
Why? Because this is where their grades are weird. They do the turnover worthy ones got him last year. Now he's actually turning it over. So somehow they're viewing him more favorably than the turnover worthy.
Those ones weren't his fault, but all the ones he almost threw.
Yeah.
Come on, man. You got to do better. Do you know who the number one is? You probably get it right. You probably
the
get the
number
top
one
three.
For what?
Who do you think the top three pro football focus rated quarterbacks are this year?
Josh Allen.
Jared Goff.
Wrong. None of those are in the three. Neither of the two you listed are in the top three.
Okay.
Try again.
Sam Darnold.
No. Lamar Jackson is number one. We're looking for Lamar Jackson, number one.
They have Jaden that high.
Joe Burrow, number two. And Jaden Daniels, number three.
Okay.
He's playing at MVP caliber level, boys.
He is. It's just unfortunately MVPs can't finish with 7 wins or 8 wins.
I wish
in the
Joe
season.
Burrow could play defense
Did
too.
You
that'd
see,
be nice.
Man, that other stat threw me off. Scott Caxmore, who must be a Chiefs fan because all of his stats, I will admit, are incredibly Chiefs leaning. But he put out a stat because he was talking about how Mahomes, the one difference in him is what we talked about earlier in the games is the one difference in him is that he just wins more than others. And I'll tell you more about Joe Burrow later.
All right, let's hear from Andy Reid.
Just a little bit away. And then Turk won't go today, but it is good. He had a knee contusion, and so we're just letting it rest today. Everybody else will be out there and working. Again, we look forward to the challenge of playing Denver. We know they're a good football team. They're very well coached in all the phases. Joe does a good job with the offense along with Sean and Vance on defense. been a head coach. He you know, he's a great football coach and has a tremendous scheme there. And then Ben works with the special teams and does a nice job there. So, and they've got good players. And they're, like I said, they're playing well. They're executing well in all three phases. So, anyways, with that, time's yours.
And Patrick, is there any expectation as far as just managing that ankle that you need to back off of him a little bit this
yeah.
week?
Yeah, he won't have to back off, but he manages it. You know, he stays on top of all that, so, yeah.
And I can't remember if you got asked this after the game or not, cleaning up a little, couple of details. Kingsley played a couple snaps on the first drive. What was happening on that?
Yeah, so our called player was 64. So then we could sub Kingsley out. When we put Mike in, yeah, Mike could come out. You have to sub the guy out that's the called player. So to do what we were trying to do, you had to make that move. But I mean, it shows you the trust that we have in Kingsley too, because we came in and threw the ball. You know, it didn't matter what the play was. We got two good young guys. You know, they're getting better as we go. So.
Is it easier, coach, to have Wanya eligible based on his limited receiving skills that we've seen? Is that sort of part of the equation as well?
To have who?
Wanya, to have him be the eligible.
Yeah. I mean, you know, we're not. Yeah. They both can catch. So, yeah, they both can catch. So, but.
Andy,
don't tell him that.
What are the timetables for Pacheco and O'Manihu in terms of return to practice?
Yeah, we're taking it week by week, day by day, that whole deal. I mean, it's and then we've got to work through the doctors on that. So, and the checkups there, but they're both doing great. They're both making progress. Juju the same way. So we're getting close. You know.
But not this week, you
don't think? I don't think so, no.
Andy, obviously you're looking forward, not back, but I wonder, as you think of the season, what do you think most has enabled you guys to keep moving forward and stay undefeated?
Yeah, these games have been close, a lot of them. So I'm proud of the guys for playing for four quarters and hanging together for that time. So I'd probably tell you that. We can get better in all the different spots, me included. We're all kind of working in the same direction right now, and that's important to see if we can't improve as we go.
Has it seemed to you it's been a variety of different ways, finding ways to win? I don't know if more so in the past or not, but does that seem like that to you?
Yeah, different things have shown up at important times. I'd tell you, yes. And guys have stepped up, and really all three phases have been involved with that. So I'd tell you, yes.
Maybe one of those things, at least on the offensive side, is the success on third down the last few weeks. Is there some key ingredients to that?
Yeah, first of all, Matt does a great job supplying the plays on that. And the guys buy in and believe in it. And you got an offensive line that's doing a nice job protecting and a quarterback that's, you know, a real good player. And then the receivers and Kells have just and Noah have done a great job with their execution there. So and staying alive. So if there was a breakdown here or there, they did a great job in coverage. The guys stay alive and are able to get themselves open. But you know, it starts with Matt and what he's put together for them.
Andy, you mentioned the interior line. Those guys have had good years in the past. What stands out about those three in the middle for you right now?
Yeah, well, they're all best buddies. I mean, they're always together, and they're good players. They're good players, and they work at it. They play together long enough where they kind of know each other's strengths and weaknesses, and cover up, you know, the weakness and with each other's strengths. So it again, these challenges that we had, and this week won't be any different. I mean, their inside guys are great, so it'll be another big challenge for those inside three to execute, and just like last week was. I mean, that was a big challenge. So it's but they're good friends. They spend a lot of time together. They study. They're smart guys.
As you watch the film these past few weeks for Xavier, how do you sense that he's developing? What's the messaging come out of the last game?
Yeah, he's doing a good job. You know, he just had that luck of stepping out of bounds there. I mean, but what a great route. That was an adjustment he made to even put himself in that position off of the route. But he's doing a good job. He didn't have his number dialed up as much as he did the weeks in the past. I mean, most of the stuff ended up going to Kels and eight. So that, but there'll be weeks like, you know, that his number's called up more. I mean, that just is how it goes in these games. Yeah.
Matt, and if it's not gives away any sort of scheme thing, what adjustment did he make on?
Yeah, so they clouded that side, and he adjusted back outside and was able to escape where you get yourself forced wide. He was able to keep himself inbounds and escape that corner, not force him wider than the play normally brings you to. So, but I thought he did a great job on that part. And then just, you know, he'll learn from that. Young guy, he'll learn from it. You know, you won't see him step out of bounds very often. I mean, but it was good. It was good. He can take something positive out of it, and then he can take something he can learn.
The Farmer's Dog is fresh.
You're listening to 96.5 The Fan on KFNZ FM and AM HD1 and HD2 right here in Kansas City.
Pat do a ton of talking, and you see this with good receivers, good quarterbacks. They've got a feel for one another in their games, and you say receivers are quarterback friendly. Well, some of it's just body language and seeing the same space together and being able to work in that.
Todd? Sean Payton, someone you competed against before, obviously year two for him there. I'm guessing there's more and more characteristics of his type of team in year two of this. Just what sort of things do you expect from a team that's coached by him?
Yeah, well, first of all, he's a great football coach and a heck of an offensive mind. He's got a young quarterback there that you can just see him developing every week. The kid gets better and better. So he knows how to do all that, and he does it as well as anybody in this league. So they're improving. Their defense is playing out of their mind. They're one of the top defenses in the National Football League, so in a bunch of categories. And, he's got a good staff that he's hired, and he's leading it the right way.
Yeah. Everybody knows how fun it is to have an explosive play on offense, but is there something that you find more satisfying about a longer drive that ends in a touchdown, and is there a sort of a cumulative effect of being successful on long sustaining drives?
I just like touchdowns. I mean, I'm not sure. I don't grade them. I mean, as long as we can get in there. I think probably for the fans, it's the long ones, you know, the long bombs are all good. For us, it's so hard to score in this league. You just want to get in the end zone, whatever way is working for you. Yeah, good.
All right, that was Andy Reid speaking to the media. We're expected to hear from Patrick Mahomes in a second. A couple key things there. He said Juju Smith-Schuster and Tershawn Warren will not participate in practice today. Did say Andy did say on Mahomes' left ankle that they're not going to have to back off of it or anything like that. He's going to be a full go, expected to be a full go at practice today. And as far as further down on the IR, et cetera, Isaiah Pacheco, Charles Omenihu, still week by week, day by day.
But he pretty much ruled him out for Sunday.
Well, yeah. Except they're getting close.
Also breaking news, Andy Reid likes touchdowns. Did you know that?
He does.
I, for a while there, honestly, I wasn't sure with all the field goals they were kicking. But the last three games, they have been significantly better in the red zone. So I guess Andy was just playing coy.
I think because they're undefeated, they're going to slow play the heck out of Omenihu and Pacheco coming back too.
I just think when you have, if they, in a weird way, if they beat Buffalo without either of those players, well, then really what's the rush? Like, mm-hmm.
Yep.
Not technically, not mathematically, but you would borderline have the number one seed locked up if you did that. And so at that point, then you have a different conversation.
All right, let's go back out there and hear from Patrick Mahomes on 96.5 The Fan.
It's doing good, you know. Obviously, when you have a little bit of a roll, it's a little bit of sore. But I'm able to move around, and I look forward to getting out of practice and seeing how I can push it as the week goes on.
Something like that, do you, like, Monday night, is treatment stuff begin, like, right away? You didn't just go home and go to bed?
I mean, you can only do so much. I mean, obviously, it's pretty late, but getting some stuff in the training room after the game, and then getting some stuff to take home, you throw it on there. Stuff you can do overnight that you put on there to kind of reduce swelling and stuff like that. You come in early Monday morning. It was a long day yesterday of watching film and getting treatment and doing some rehab type stuff and prepare yourself for a short week and a practice today.
Patrick, one thing Monday night I don't think we asked you. You actually heard it before you let go of the ball on that play. Do you remember anything? Was that just a blur? Or?
I was going to run, and so at the last second I saw him open and just kind of get the ball out before I got past that the line of scrimmage there, and it kind of just it snagged on me a little bit, and with the previous injury, it just sent a sharp pain down my leg. But you just get the ball in the end zone, third and goal. We were able to score a touchdown in a big moment, and kind of once the pain went away, I was able to get back out there and play again.
So you didn't necessarily feel it like before you let go of the ball. It's just all.
You definitely feel it, but you're more focused on the actual throw at that time. So just try to get the ball off as fast as possible, and then get away from anyone else that wants to hit me.
Patrick, you guys had a couple 10-plus play drives in that second half, which has been sort of a thing for you guys this year. I wonder if you could think back to St. Joe and what are those days like when you work on that, and how much do you think that is correlated to what you guys have done this year?
Yeah, 100%. I mean, just Coach Reed prepares us for those moments. He prepares us to be in those long drives. We do long drive drill like every day, and it sucks. I mean, it's the best way to say it. But at the same time, it prepares you to be ready for those moments in the game. And I think you've seen this year and in previous years, it seems like we play our best football in the fourth quarter. And it's because we've been preparing ourselves all year long to play our best football then. And games in the NFL are such close margins that every game seems like it goes down to that to the very end, and I feel like we're the best prepared team in those situations.
Can you describe maybe the exhaustion that those drills are during the hot days in San Jose?
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to like act like it's the hardest for me, but I mean, I know they're hard for a lot of the guys, like the receivers and the tight ends, the O-line, D-line, DBs. I know I'm kind of the motivator. I'm like kind of push the guys through the finish line. But the coach doesn't let you sub out. He makes you go for 15, 18 plays, whatever it is in a row. You might have a water break in there here and there. But it's for moments like this last game, and it's proven. And we've been able to play great football in fourth quarters and end of seasons over these last few years, and I believe that's a big reason why.
Snap-wise, it looked like DeAndre took a significant step last week. How has that process gone, and where does the progression go as you get into the third week of playing with him?
Yeah, I mean, you just continue to get him more and more comfortable within the offense. I mean, obviously, he had a big game this last game, but we continue to give him more and more opportunities to make plays, and we move him around and let him do what he's special at, and that's catching the football, winning one-on-one matchups. And getting open in zone coverage. And so it's just going to help the entire offense, not only for him, but helping other guys get open as well. And obviously with the big game that he had this last game, I'm sure there'll be more eyes on him this week, which will in turn help other guys get open.
I'm sorry, Andy complimented Xavier on the adjustment he made, ended up stepping out of bounds. Just how have you seen him sort of progress in that sense as a rookie?
Yeah, I mean, he does a lot of great things. And like you said, on that play, he kind of had like a more of an in-cut type route. They went to a coverage that they hadn't played a lot. With kind of a two invert with the safety kind of playing in the middle there. And so I looked down the middle of the field because that's kind of my guy I looked to. And then at the corner of my eye, I saw Xavier down the sideline making that adjustment. And so I tried to get him the ball as quickly as possible. Obviously, I mean, you're half an inch from scoring a touchdown or whatever it is, maybe even less than that. And so, I mean, he'll learn from that. But I thought he did a great job on that play in general of recognizing the coverage and getting to the right spot. And regardless of stats and whatever it is, the threat of him and over the top is getting a lot of other guys open. And so that gets lost in the swing of things is that you don't see the big catches downfield, but I promise you the defenses are respecting his speed, and that's helping get guys like DeAndre and Trav open kind of in that medium range.
Patrick, having said that, but this is about the point of the year last year when Rice started to really pick it up. Are you seeing any signs that maybe he could have a similar jump in production?
Yeah. I mean, Rasheed's season was special last year, and I think a lot came that we needed him to step up and have that role in the offense. I mean, obviously, we've gotten guys in here that I think that take off that pressure of having one guy make all those big plays, but I think you'll continue to see big games from him. You've seen it in certain moments throughout the season, the big plays. You've seen certain plays where he's caught the ball and scored touchdowns. And so I think his role will get bigger and bigger within the offense, but I think – we're probably more well-rounded as an offense in general, so maybe not as big of the numbers and stats that Rasheed had last year.
How much are you learning about DeAndre as far as how he kind of sees coverages and maybe just sees the way that you adjust routes the same way that you see them versus the coverages every day?
Yeah, I mean a lot of that comes with reps, but you can tell by the way he talks and the way he does stuff on the football field that he has a good feel for getting himself open, being in the right spot at the right time. But there's certain things that we do in our offense, even at the end of the game. That's not what we were really taught to do, is kind of look right there. But I kind of just try to get him to do it so we can get a few more yards, get that first down. And that's stuff that we'll learn from this next time. And so he does a great job of getting himself open, being in the right spot at the right time. And as we get more and more reps, that'll continue to get better.
Was that second and two, I think on the second drive of the first quarter, short throw over the middle to him? Was that a true RPO, or was that just
that was a true RPO, and the safety came down pretty aggressively, and I was able to hit him. And then if you watch, we kind of ran some of the similar type runs later in the game. That safety stayed back, so having that threat, not only you get the one completion for a big game, but it helps the run game out as well, and it's keeping defenses honest on how they're going to attack playing against us.
We'll go Blair, Todd, and then Baye. Go ahead, Blair.
Patrick, going back to the long drives for a second, how much of that is a product of success on third down, and what contributes to that? Because those numbers have spiked here the last few weeks.
Yeah, I think, first off, having manageable third downs, running the ball so well and getting in these third and shorts, third and mediums where I can throw the ball underneath and we can still get first downs. We're not trying to force it with these third and long situations. So I think that contributes to a lot of the success. And then I think a good planning with Nagy, Coach Nagy, and all the different coaches, and having a great third down scheme, having answers versus all the coverages the defenses play. And obviously, I feel like we get a lot of different coverages than they might play in a week before, but we've kind of seen some of them now. And so we know, and they let me know if we do get some coverages that have previously worked on us, where to go with the football, and I'm able to get the ball out, and guys are getting first downs.
The Broncos played you guys really well last year, got you one time, mm-hmm. played you tough here at home. What about their defense, the way they're playing right now, is going to be the biggest challenge for y'all?
Yeah, I mean, they're very well coached. They play extremely hard, and they have great football players. I mean, that's what it takes on great defenses, is they have an understanding for the scheme that we run. I mean, Coach Joseph has played against us a lot as a head coach, as a defensive coordinator, so he knows how to take away some of the stuff that we're really good at. They have great – I mean, Surtain might be the best corner in the NFL. So you have a guy that you can take away some guys because he's that good of a player, that high caliber of a player. But then the whole entire team, they play together as a team. They play hard. They don't let you have anything easy. And so some of those drives, even in the game we won, we got down the football field, but they didn't give up touchdowns. They forced us into turnovers. They forced us into field goals, and they played the long game. So it's about us executing, like you said, these long drives and finding ways to get in the end zone. And know it's going to take perfection on every single drive in order to do that.
When you guys are playing at noon on Sunday, it's pretty rare, mm-hmm. a little weird for y'all. You liken just a regular old Sunday? You know what a regular old Sunday is like anymore?
I'm excited for it because my kids are going to get to come. Like, all these night games are awesome, and they're prime time, but the kids don't get to go to a lot of those because it's past bedtime, or if they do, they have to leave early. And so I'll be able to have the kids at the game. They'll get to have a great experience at Arrowhead. And hopefully we can wake up and have a good game. It's going to be a great challenge for us, though, and we're just going to take our best football against a division opponent. But hopefully you get in there, get a win, and you're able to watch football the rest of the day.
Patrick, you use that term regardless of stats specific to Xavier, but I wonder if that speaks to a little bit of how this season has been. I mean, would you point to something beyond the stats that accounts for why you guys are undefeated?
I think it's just we're a really good football team, and like a team, and whatever it takes that day, guys are going to step up and make the play. If it's defense, if it's offense, if it's special teams, and each individual in those situations, they're going to step up and make that play whenever their number is called that day. And none of us are about stats here. We're about wins. And we've kind of dealt. We've went seasons where we've had great stats and not won the Super Bowl. And the seasons like last year, whenever you don't necessarily have the great stats, but you win the Super Bowl, still feel way better. And so just to be able to go up in each and every week, no knowing that it's going to take whatever it takes, we're going to find a way to win the football game. It comes with experience, and it comes with a great culture that we've built here.
With that, do you feel like this is the most adaptable maybe you guys have been? I mean, each week sort of has its own story. I mean, do you feel like that's sort of happened?
Yeah, in a sense. I think it's just a great culture of winning. I mean, guys just know how to find ways to win the game, and I think we're getting better and better. Offensively, I think we're getting better each and every week. Defensively, they've been great all year long. And so I know we're not playing our best football yet, and we're still finding ways to win. So let's just continue to get better and build up into the playoffs.
Thanks, Patrick.
That was Patrick Mahomes speaking here on 96.5 The Fan. So on the noon game, makes sense. I think, yeah, the kid angle definitely for whether you're Patrick Mahomes with your kids trying to go to a game or, as you were saying, you like the noon games. I think if you have kids, the noon games are better. Otherwise, I like the red zone during the noon slate. Let me go NFL red zone noon slate. Chiefs at 325, please.
I know it's still very unpopular. I'm hit or miss on red zone.
What?
Depends on whether or not. I've told this before. It depends on whether or not I don't know, mentally in the right state for it. It's just too much. They don't cut the audio enough from each thing. It's like he's talking over two different audios in the back of a game. It's sensory overload.
It's the best, man.
Sensory overload.
It is the
best. If there is one
best.
Really good game on between two good teams, I would prefer that every time.
If there's eight games, though, there's nothing better. Now, I'll give you the 325 window, which is, again, why I like when the Chiefs play there. 325 window, if either the Chiefs are playing or, you know, like last week, Lions and Packers.
I'm on that.
Right?
I just
but
did that.
That game ended up being crappy. So it was a good thing you had red zone because you got to see the Seahawks and Rams overtime or the way the game was developing. Otherwise, you might not have seen that unless you had a Sunday ticket. So I think red zone is successful for a reason. It's not. I think at one point even Bob was against red zone channel. Now he loves it. I think it's one. You got to watch it for a couple weeks, and then I feel like yeah.
Cody, so are you like if you have the four box? No, only one sound. Only one game you have sound for, but you have four games on. Is that?
Yeah, but like that's not how they do it. It's edited by Red Zone. So like
correct.
They will have Scott Hansen talking over play-by-play audio of four different games. Yeah. Oh, leap off a bridge, that's too much.
Well, that's why I was
just play the audio
of
one game, the one you're talking about.
No, but he's trying to make sure you don't miss what's happening in the game in the top left-hand corner.
Oh, yeah, I'll totally hear the audio from that left-hand corner game while the right-hand corner audio is also playing while the guy is actively talking over it.
They don't have Kevin Harlan at full blast while Scott Hansen's talking.
It's too much.
Oh, I don't know about that.
The audio, they should, if Scott Hansen's talking, the audio of the games should be none or one.
I do agree.
They don't
have
audio of four on it. Yeah, like they have like the ambient sound on four games at once.
At least two sometimes. I don't know if it's all
four.
They
switch back and forth.
I think the audio.
Witching hour is the best.
I agree with you, Cody. The audio thing would drive me crazy. Having the games up there alone is fine. But yeah, the audio from two different things and somebody's talking over it. Hey, look at that. That might be a little bit much.
And look, I got kids like talking to me at the same time, too. It's sensory overload. Sometimes when I hear things like repeated over and over again, I'm always like, why don't other teams copy this? So they were talking about the long drive in this press conference a lot. Mm-hmm. This is not the first time that's come up. Andy Reid runs a drill called long drive. He makes the players on the field for 15 consecutive minutes, and you don't get to progress the ball no matter how successful you are. Patrick Mahomes throws an 80-yard touchdown. The drive's not over. You go up 5 yards, and you keep going up 5 yards until the drive's over. Jason Kelce was on the New Heights podcast once and said, that is the single worst drill he's ever, like, he hated it the most, said vomited 12 plays in, had to stay at whatever, right? He said it's the single most difficult drill he's ever been a part of. It can't be an accident Andy keeps doing it, and this team is better at sustaining long drives than any other team in the NFL. I know Mahomes must have something to do with it. Why didn't any other coach copy this? Yeah, the is that a single other coach who wants to run long drive?
Push you to the brink enough times where when it comes up, you feel comfortable in that situation.
It's that, but also it challenges you to stay mentally sharp when you're exhausted. It's a conditioning thing. It's a mental thing. All of it. Yeah.
I'm sure there's other coaches
that have some form of fashion of it. There's no way he's the only coach on earth that does it. There's got to, maybe in camp, but like there's got to be some other coaches that have some variation of that. I don't think he's the only coach in college football or NFL that's doing that.
I think he's one of very few.
Maybe so.
I've heard other like players and other podcasts, all of them mention this drive, and the rest of them make it sound like this is not something that happens anywhere else they do their work, which is always so fascinating because it's just like,
well, he runs a tougher training camp. We know that. Maybe that's that element of it. I'm just like, I would love to know if college coaches do that or anything like that too.
No, it's just it's just one of the little things, obviously, that makes Andy Reid successful.
Mm-hmm.
The Chiefs are the third best team in the NFL at converting a fresh set of downs into a first down. And I know that's surprising probably to people considering how much they had struggled early on in the season on offense. There's only two teams better at getting the ball and then just continuously turning that into first down. So do like 70% of the time. It's crazy.
You mean getting the ball, getting a first down, and then continuing to get a first down after that. They're third best.
Yeah. They're one of the most efficient offenses in the league. It just doesn't feel that way.
Well, they've just been way better in the red zone the last two or three games. That's why everything feels... I mean, look at the scores. I mean, look what they're putting up on the board now all of a sudden. A 30-point performance finally, 27, 28, 26. Like, there's a, it's not just a coincidence. Look at their red zone numbers in those games. They're way better in the red zone since post-bye, really.
Yep.
Week 7.
I think that also makes Tobel's decision even more egregious. Is they were going on long drive. Your defense was gassed in that second half because the long drives that were consistently happening.
Yeah, physical game.
And the Chiefs defense had to also be gassed.
And they had finally had one drive where they went on the long drive, and you got to take advantage of it because your defense can't stop the run, and it just makes it even worse that they were that good in those long drives as well.
All right, let's get to all 32 a little bit here on Cody and Goal. I'll start things off. Let's stick with Andy Reid. We were just talking about him.
Yeah.
The challenge for him, of course, to get recognized in the Coach of the Year market is that nonsense. Everybody expects him to be great and his teams to be great. There's been a big shift in this market, though, from being 30, 40, 50 to one at one point to win it. He now has the fourth best odds, and you might be like, well, yeah, duh. But
I'm
that's not
he's behind Dan that, Campbell,
that,
maybe?
That's not how the market, both. That's not how the market typically works, because that's why Belichick didn't win Coach of the Year all those years. So, yes, real quick, Dan Quinn is the favorite, 2-1. Sean Payton, 7.5-1.
Sean Payton?
Dan Campbell, 7.5-1. Then Andy Reid, 7.5-1. So he actually has the second best. He actually has the second best odds.
What's Sean Payton doing
on that? Crazy.
Mike Tomlin, 8.5-1. Kevin O'Connell has slipped back to 9-1. I don't bring it up to talk about them so much as it is, you know what, for the first time, because there's some thought of maybe they could actually pull this thing off, Andy Reid at 7.5-1 is live. I still don't, if you bet it when he was 20 or 30 to one, obviously I like it a lot better. The challenge for him still, even though he has tied for the second best odds, I still think it requires him to win like 15 games at least, if not 16, to win it, even though we all know he's doing a hell of a job. He's had all these injuries. Like, if Dan Quinn and the Commanders, rookie quarterback, first time as a head coach with that team, and they win the NFC East and they're a 12-win team, Dan Quinn's winning the award.
Definitely.
Unless Andy gets 16 or obviously a perfect season.
At least, I don't even know if he needs a perfect season. 16-1, maybe.
Yeah, 16.
Gets it done because these other people lose. The Sean Payton one makes no sense to me. They were 8-9 last year. They're pretty much on pace to be 9-8.
He's going to fall off because the Broncos are going to fall off,
so,
too.
So that part I don't understand. But yeah, I
get why Dan
Quinn's
the favorite, though.
He probably still won't win the award, which is the most annoying thing on the planet. Andy Reid has had to lose his number one, number two wide receiver, his number one running back. He had to, I don't understand. Mm-hmm. He has to deal with the pressure of the, like the narrative doesn't apply to him for whatever reason, even though that's really stupid. It probably should, but it doesn't. Speaking of head coaches and AFC West, in this case, former AFC West head coaches, Geo, as in Boomer in Geo, over at WFAN, our sister station in New York, had quite the suggestion this week that I want to get your guys' opinion on. He was talking about how the Jets next season, already next season talk in New York, they're going to have Aaron Rodgers again, right? They need a ready-to-hit-the-ground-running type of head coach who can take this group of vets all the way to the playoffs immediately, right? No messing around. No coordinator coach. Can't be having that. We need an established guy. He first pointed out that Bill Belichick's essentially just been crapping on their owner every single opportunity he's been given. Yeah. So Bill Belichick's out. Who was the next former established head coach he thought might fit? John Gruden.
Okay.
His suggestion is that the New York Jets hire John Gruden, who recently started a TikTok account in which he's teaching people about football.
Yeah.
To be the next head coach of the Jets.
Old school coach. He was at training. He was at training camp.
Hilarious hire.
If the Jets went that route after the mess that this season has already been, it's, I mean, honestly, I believe it, like, that it could happen because it's the Jets, you know? Like,
it's actually not unbelievable for them as an organization.
Win. Bye. Win. 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 17-0.
Sean Gruden.
I mean, I have no doubt. I think he was letting people know how much he loves football.
What's
that?
I played you guys one of those videos that he does, yeah. Like where he's
you did
got me feeling nicey or whatever he says, and he
look,
has a little song bit.
Retread hires happen all the time. He obviously had some baggage with him. Who knows?
Said some anti-gay some emails and stuff.
But Jets who knows,
be,
man?
The Jets might be better hiring Belichick nonetheless, even though he talked smack against the owner, than hiring John Gruden. You know what, Bill? We know you talk smack, but we're still we want to bring you in, please.
Like, I can't even think of who else he's fits a better that option. Mold, though, in fairness. Established head coach who's available. Mike McCarthy, if he got fired?
Yep.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure Aaron Rodgers really wants that.
Mike McCarthy... Pete Carroll route again.
If they brought Mike McCarthy in, you might as well try to find at least four other Packers players who are just on the market in any way, shape, or form and just change
as
the
far
name.
As I don't think he'll go to the Jets, but Cliff Kingsbury is going to end up with another head coaching gig after what he's doing this year with the Commanders.
Probably. And if not, he'll end up being like a lifetime NFL coordinator.
Will he go to the Bears if they fired Eberflus?
I think it'd be a mistake for the Bears, but he could be. Again, I'm just all in on the Ben Johnson to Chicago thing, but yeah, that's the possibility.
Kingsbury has history with Caleb Williams, I think, as well from college. Mm-hmm. I don't
for sure.
That,
yeah, USC.
But he's familiar with this play. I don't think he'd want that job, sure.
So mine has to do with rookie quarterback. You mentioned Dan Quinn, and the Commanders are doing great. Jane Daniels obviously is turning up and going crazy.
Yeah, someone says, it was just still at this conversation too with coaches. That's why it fit real quick. And then I know you have yours, but so why are you guys so concerned on the text line about Coach of the Year? Who cares? Andy doesn't need it. We all know he's the best. Give it to the guy that needs the moral bump. I hear you, but then like I guess we shouldn't talk about MVP either. Mahomes doesn't need the MVP award.
No,
like you know what I mean. So I hear you.
I think he's deserving.
We hear you. He's a Hall of Fame coach already. He's going to go down as maybe the greatest coach of all time. I get what you're saying, but like if it's just why are we talking about Coach of the Year? I mean, we could apply that to so many other things. Patrick Mahomes doesn't need it. Chris Jones doesn't need Defensive Player of the Year. We already know he's a future Hall of Famer. Travis Kelce doesn't need any extra accolades, but it'd be nice.
Text line had it right, by the way. Coach, who's the veteran who's available? Mike Vrabel.
Oh, there you go. Who are you taking that if you're Mike?
That is a really good
Are you taking that if you're Vrabel, name. Though? But that's good. He'll be back in the coaching cycle. That's a good poll.
Good answer.
One team that needed a quarterback and got one is Washington. For some reason, it just seems like with them making the trade for Marcus Lattimore, they're going to pay him, presumably going to have him for a little bit. He's a guy that fits Dan Quinn a little bit, you know, a defensive guy. Let me bring in a defensive corner who could be my one right away. They might be the threat in the NFC long-term if we're looking at the next 2, 3, 4 years where the Commanders, maybe not this year, but looking ahead, they're a team to keep an eye on just as much as maybe the Lions are or as much to be in that conversation with the Lions, 49ers for the best team in the NFC because Jaden Daniels has, I think, proven that he's been that good. And then you bring in Lattimore and Dan Quinn's got his thing going.
Yeah, I mean, look, they have the quarterback figured out, so that, of course, always is going to put you in the mix every single year.
It's a little bit iffy.
The only thing I'm iffy on is like I want to see how the rest of the year plays out. Dan Quinn, are we 100% sold that he's on that level of those guys? And then let's just see also what happens in the NFC East from here on out. Right now, it looks like the Commanders are in a good spot. So I hear you. Yeah, I mean, when you have the quarterback, you're always going to be in the mix. Do I think they suddenly are going to be like a top two NFC team for the next 5 years? I pump the brakes on that, but they have the quarterback, so they're going to be in the mix.
Here's the argument. I actually think it's more likely they're that than a contender this year. The contender this year stuff is, I tend to go historical on that. There's never been a single rookie quarterback to make a Super Bowl, so I don't think it's going to be Jaden Daniels this time. As good as the team is, I'll be honest.
Yeah, Andrew, you're talking long term, right?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. So, like, I actually think Drew might be onto something because if you look at the NFC versus the AFC, there are no NFC teams where I am just like, for the next 3 years, I know they're the goods. Still got some long-term questions on Brock Purdy. Is he the real deal? Jared Goff? Okay, yeah.
Jordan Love's health at this point?
He's maintained it for a while, but can that continue forever? Jordan Love, I still want to see a little bit more. I don't know. I kind of counted the Eagles out this year. Obviously. And I told you, I didn't know if the Eagles were going to win 13 games or 5. It appears it's 13 games. But Dak's fried. The Cardinals are better. The Rams are probably on their swan song.
They don't have the quarterbacks.
Where will the Vikings be with McCarthy? Like, I don't have any less confidence in Washington than any of the rest of the teams that 3 years down the road they'll be good. That's the advantage I would give them.
Yeah, no, I mean, you have the quarterback. That's puts you in an unbelievable spot. I'm just saying they're 7-2. We know they're going to be in the playoffs this year. I'm just saying a little more sustainability than just 9 weeks of football to say that now suddenly they're just like one of the teams to beat for the next decade or a half decade. That's all. But it looks like they're going to be a problem.
I mean, anytime you get the quarterback, you're one of the teams to beat. That's although I don't know.
I mean, the,
think about how many Eagles, they said that about Justin Herbert. They never went anywhere.
No, I mean, like Jalen Hurts went to the Super Bowl not too long ago. Then they had a massive step back last year. So that's the thing, that the Commanders might have the quarterback. They could have a good year. Am I convinced they're consistently going to be a 12-win team now? The Lions have been that all of a sudden now. It'll be 2 years in a row that they do that. We know in the AFC, the Chiefs and the Bills basically have kind of been that.
Niners.
Baltimore, yeah. Niners. So that's where I want to see, can they be sustained? And when it comes to consistent division titles or things like that, and that's not where I'm at yet, I guess. But yeah, Marshawn Lattimore definitely, Drew, is a nice addition for them as well. Up next, let's get back into some college football a little bit. College football playoff rankings were released yesterday. The first ones of 2024. K-State on the fringe there, but what kind of matchups could we be seeing? And we'll also talk about sports betting passing in Missouri last night.
It's better over here.
Now at T-Mobile, get four 5G phones on us and four lines for $25 a line per month when you switch with eligible trade-ins. All on America's largest 5G network.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees and $10 device connection charge. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on a required finance agreement due. Bill credits end if you pay off devices early. See T-Mobile.com.
Come join me, Andrew Filippone.
And me, Patrick Peterson, three-time NFL All-Pro cornerback on First and Pod for premier NFL coverage and conversations.
Our motto on the podcast is every team, every week, and we don't play favorites. Every episode, you get a glimpse of the entire National Football League with First and Pod. Follow and listen to First and Pod on Mondays and Fridays on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.